This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
Daniel Jeremiah of the NFL Network. Former member of NFL's front offices. He's got some background in that regard. He was an advocate for the Seahawks going after Julio Jones. And that's not as important as the reason why. Obviously, the Seahawks didn't acquire Julio Jones. But the reason why he thought they should is something that can inform our conversation about how Seattle should see its situation going forward. So here is Daniel Jeremiah. He's on the Brock and Salk podcast explaining that he thinks that this is a short-term window for Seattle and that they should be approaching this year and next year like it's the end of their run with Russell Wilson. Here's Daniel Jeremiah.
That's why the Julio Jones thing to me made sense with them, which is just a full, all chips in, let's really go for this thing on this last run here with Russell. If not, you don't have any picks next year. If you wanted to at that point in time, if this whole thing doesn't work and you just, you know, you're a one and done in the playoffs, you don't make the postseason, the time would probably be right to make the trade and get some picks and try and rebuild this thing. So it definitely feels like this is a short-term marriage we have here with Russell and the Seahawks. And so if that's the case, let's you know, make a run at it.
Let's start off. Is he right? Is this a short-term marriage?
I don't think you can operate as if it is. I think you have to continue to believe that this is not something that is going to end and do everything in your power to make sure that Russell Wilson's your quarterback for the foreseeable future. You're not doing better than him. You've stumbled into something amazing. Why would you get rid of it? Why would you even think about getting rid of it?
The response would be, it's not just your choice. And whether it is him wanting to leave and asking to leave or choosing not to resign at the end of his contract, which is three more years, that there's two parties to this, and it's not just Seattle saying we want to keep you. But if you have someone who is less than thrilled to be here or outright difficult, that you might be better off approaching this as if it is a short-term marriage and saying, hey, we're not going to accept that anything is a given beyond 2021 or 2022, whenever it is. We're going to approach it as if, hey, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
And maybe that's the way to go. And I would honestly, unless this turned, even if this turned into an Aaron Rodgers situation or a Deshaun Watson situation before all the allegations of sexual misconduct that he had thrown against him, those two teams were saying, yep, we're not doing it. At least then.
Here's the argument for why to treat it as a short-term marriage. Here's the argument for why to do it. Is to say, we've been in the same spot, for better or worse, for what, the past five seasons? Where, good enough to win a playoff game, maybe even win the division, not good enough to make a serious run at a title. We've been a good team. We have not been a great team. And that has taken its toll on the team. It's taken its toll on our relationship with the player. That all of our attempts to sort of build without a finish line and sustain, we've sustained good. And given all that, let's fire every bullet we have to try and be great these next 2 years. And if that doesn't work, well, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Go all in. And the argument, the thing that I would point to with, that prevents you from getting in the situation that Green Bay is in right now, where they've got a really good team who's actually been better than your team for the past 2 years, and they have a quarterback who feels, hey, you guys are not only planning for the future beyond me, but you guys have never really given me the shot like Tampa Bay gave Tom Brady last year. And to say, instead of getting to that situation, let's do it. Let's be aggressive. Let's go out. Trade for Jamal Adams like you did a year ago. Be more aggressive. You didn't get Julio Jones. Let's see who else is going to become available in the next month. And let's go for it.
They already are going for it then. Because you just said they traded for Jamal Adams, you know? And I know the Green Bay compares, and you don't want it to get to that point. But, I mean, Rodgers is crazy. The team's 13-3 the last 2 years. I mean, I don't care how he feels about the Jordan Love situation. He's not going to a better situation from where he's at right now.
You might be right, But it doesn't matter because that's how he feels. And he's created a situation and a crisis for you where if you're Green Bay, you've got to wade through that.
Right.
If you're a team and the choice is between wading through a huge sort of showdown with your quarterback or, hey, let's take our best shot at it. And if it doesn't work, then let's look to move on and potentially including trading your quarterback. Like, you have to include the possibility, a potential outcome here is that your quarterback goes sideways with you.
I get that. I mean, that's always something that you're thinking about. But you're also, you know, over the course of an NFL season, assuming that injuries are going to happen, too. You can't really predict when. I think we're assuming that it's going to get to the point that it's gotten to with Aaron Rodgers. And there's just... Based off of my read of Russell Wilson, I just have a hard time seeing him take that much of a hard-lined approach when it comes to potentially getting his way. So from that standpoint, I wonder. But, you know, if we're going to go down this road, say you do decide, okay, well, you know what? Going all in, that's the way to go. Does that work? Does that actually work in the NFL? Because I'm not so sold it is. I'm not so sold that this is something that consistently can help you out. Now, two teams are doing it and feel like, it feels like they've been doing it the last couple of years. I guess Kansas City, you could argue, is doing it now this offseason.
Kansas City's different, though, right? Because their quarterback hasn't been expensive yet. Right?
Not yet.
Not for a long
period of
time.
Helps them out a lot.
But you're right. But they're kind of in that different window. They're kind of in the window Seattle was when they went and traded for Percy Harvin, right? Like,
right.
You still got some house money kicking around.
You have...
Tampa's definitely doing it.
Yes.
But their quarterback, it's not even a how long are we going to get along with him. It's how long can he continue to function at this level.
The Rams have said, we don't care about draft picks for a while.
Yeah.
And they have really just gone after star players as if they're some sort of NBA franchise.
Does all in work? Daniel Jeremiah, again from the NFL Network, he has been in NFL front offices, and he was asked about his experience. Is that a strategy that pays off?
Yeah, I've definitely been on. I've been in three organizations where we've made an all in push, and to be honest with you, it didn't work in any of the three.
Is it desperation? Is it? But that's a pretty compelling counter argument of, hey, when you get outside the way you've built your team, when you start doing something and thinking about that's actually not an approach that nets the kind of results. It sounds better in theory than it works in practice, kind of like communism.
And also, Danny, I mean, you can go all in, but don't you have to know when to hold them? Know when to fold
them?
Yeah,
but see, but that's kind of the part of staying at the table is not the goal. Like, surviving is not the goal. Getting to the playoffs every year is not the goal. Like, that's the Marty Schottenheimer approach. Like, Marty Schottenheimer, for all these years as a coach, he was great at getting your team to the playoffs. Like, you want to hire a coach to have you go 9-7 or 10-6? He might be the guy that you'd choose above anybody else. But those weren't the teams that were... He's known most for some of the postseason failures that he had and teams that he got and getting to the brink and John Elway. You don't want to be that guy. You don't want to be the guy that's always at the table but never really able to get to the final or win the championship.
But isn't that the entirety of the league outside of the Patriots? I mean, and I would just say over the last 20 years, Seattle's gotten to three Super Bowls. Pittsburgh's gotten to three Super Bowls. New England's gone to, what, 10? And you look at all of the games that have been played over those last 20 years. After that, it's been a couple of teams that have gone to two, and that's it. Like, I think you just want to make sure that you're in that spot, and as long as you have that quarterback, you are in that spot. That's the difference, Danny, between Marty Schottenheimer ball and where the Seahawks are at right now. The edge is at quarterback, where I guess was Schottenheimer's best quarterback? Young Phillip Rivers? You know, like, I
he had old Joe Montana, too.
Old Joe Montana, okay. You know, like, number 19 Joe Montana. That doesn't
Bernie
even count.
Bernie Kosar. I'll not stand for your Bernie Kosar. There was some Brian Sipe mixed in there. I got an example of an all-in that worked. 2015 Denver Broncos. That was an example of an all-in that worked. They have Peyton Manning, who is on his last legs there, and they went out and bought a defense, right? They went out and bought T.J. Ward. Did they trade for DeMarcus Ware? Like, all of the different things that they did, they went out and bought themselves a defense, and it worked in that regard. It was a little easier to go all-in for them because they knew that Peyton Manning was going to collapse. And where this is not a question about Russell Wilson's long-term career, it's about his short-term fit. But that's an example of a team that went all in.
Yeah, but where are the teams that have gone all in and didn't get there. Do we even know their names? You know, like, have they faded from existence so much that we just don't talk about them? Because I feel like we have seen teams go for broke. The teams that have been consistently successful, they don't do that. Pittsburgh doesn't do that. Green Bay doesn't do that. New England doesn't do that. Seattle hasn't done that. Do you want to operate like these go for broke teams when it worked out for Denver for a little bit of time, but look where they have been since? They are a joke right now, and they have a great defense, and despite that, quarterback-wise, they are unwatchable. So that's the risk that you also run, and that's something that I do think that you should consider when you are an organization. Yes, championships matter above all else. Do you want to win a championship at the expense of going back into the dark ages?
Yes. Don't you?
No.
If I gave you a choice, you said you win a Super Bowl, But the thing is that the year after the Super Bowl, you make the playoffs, and then after that, you miss the playoffs for 5 years? Yeah, give me the Super Bowl.
I've watched enough bad teams over my life to know that, yeah, I don't want to watch a team that doesn't matter, that doesn't count. I've seen, Danny, too many good teams to look at a team that's on the rise, that's rebuilding, and to just be patient and sit there. I mean, that's why I'm having some issues right now with the Mariners, who are in timeout today because they can't beat the Tigers.
The whole reason the Mariners are rebuilding, though, is because you don't want to just get to the playoffs. The whole reason they're rebuilding is because you don't want to just be good. You want to be have the ability to be great, and they've taken what they think is the best route to get there.
Don't you have to do that in football, though, say you were to move on from Russell Wilson? I mean, this is where you fall to.
Yeah, I'm willing to take that risk, though, if you think that you're increasing your likelihood of winning a championship. And the question is, how much are you actually complete? I'm receptive to the idea that, hey, going all in actually isn't that good a strategy. And you end up, it looks good on paper, and just like free agent acquisitions, they work much better in your thought process, and you win off-season headlines, and it doesn't translate to regular season victories. I find that argument persuasive. But the flip side of it is, like, I'd rather take the go big or go home approach of, hey, let's sort of fire all the cannons, and then we'll see where we are 2 years from now. And if you win a championship and then the bottom falls out, I shrug my arms and say, okay, that was well worth it if you win the championship.
Right, but you have to win it. And
yes.
If you don't, I mean, you're amongst the cockroaches in
scared money
in
don't
wreckage.
Make none. Scared money don't make none, Paul.
Yeah, but if you have money and you just stay in the spot where you could potentially get the jackpot, then why would you throw it all away at one point? You can sit back and be patient, like the Wobby Gong, and bide your time.
You're the Knish in Rounders. You're the Joey Knish who grinds out his rent money each week and makes the tough decisions and the smart plays and stays in the game and doesn't risk it all. And Mikey McD is the hero of Rounders because he decides that, yeah, that's a good way to earn a living, but you're not going to get rich doing that either. You're not going to get famous. He
just get a
Joey
job.
Joey Knish is the viable working for his rent money, making the smart plays and never risking too much. But the guy that wins, the guy that you want to be, and that's why you play, is to win championships. And I get the rationale. I actually support the idea of being more aggressive in this specific period of time, given your history with the quarterback.
You aren't the guy grinding. You're a phenom at that game, and you do have the chance from time to time to take home way more than rent money. I would say when you have someone like Russell Wilson on your team. And that's the difference. That's the difference between a team like the Seahawks and who's a 9-7, 8-8, like Washington right now, right? Mm-hmm. They've got a great defense. They've got some exciting players on offense. Terry McLaurin. Now Ryan Fitzpatrick's their quarterback, but I mean,
they're not going to win anything until they get a quarterback, right? Like,
right.
They might make the playoffs, but they're not going to really matter as a championship team until they get a quarterback.
Exactly. And Texter, good point by a Texter. I agree with Paul. You could end up just like New Orleans is right now. I mean, they did go all in the last couple of years. Look at the salary spot that they're in, and now it's like Taysom Hill or Jameis Winston, you know? I mean, that's the spot that they and this is going to get worse for them, I would imagine, over time. Like, they were $100 million in debt, like, going into salary cap-wise, like, it felt like going into this offseason.
Wasn't that the right approach for them, though? Even though they weren't going to be good after Breeze regardless. Like, it was the right approach. Yeah, it didn't pay off, but that was the right play. It didn't work out for them, But that was the right play. Like, you spend all your money in that window of opportunity, and instead of saying, hey, well, we hope we're good when Drew Brees isn't there, you're going to stink when Drew Brees isn't there. You might as well really stink.
Here's the difference. They probably should have moved on from Drew earlier than they did, right?
Yeah. Yes. I think that there were signs there that he was moving on, that you should have prepared for it. His eventual, I think there were signs 2 years ago that he was done. There are signs right now that you might be saying the same thing if Russell Wilson wants out. There were signs that he was not happy. There were signs that you should have known that this was coming to an end.
There are signs that he has played the best football he's ever played too. So, I mean, there's that too.
Also, they probably could have gotten a decent quarterback for the money they spent on Taysom Hill.
Taysom Hill remains the huge, biggest mystery. Like, all of us, everybody thinks Sean Payton's smart. Everybody does. And everybody thinks that his fixation with Taysom Hill is inexplicable. It's the weirdest thing. The only guy who seems to like him is the guy that everyone thinks is smart, which means that either he's not smart and everybody's wrong about that, or he is smart and everybody's wrong about Taysom Hill. One of those two things is true. It's Danny and Gallant. It's time to go around the NFL.
It's time to go around the NFL. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
I love that Mora hates the Tim Tebow quarterback archetype, because it's not just Tim Tebow. Now we're putting Taysom Hill in this conversation.
From the 253, I hate this person. About 4 years until we can draft Arch Manning. Hate you, 253. I loathe any discussion of Arch Manning.
We almost didn't bring him up today. Around the NFL with Mora Dooley.
I need more talk about another Manning like I need a shotgun blast to the face.
Is Arch Manning going to be the greatest Manning of all time?
I've got something that can turn that frown upside down.
Ooh.
Per Albert Breer, the NFL is officially putting out notice that it's looking for proposals to find a partner city for an international series game in Germany. This could happen as early as 2022, and they've discussed putting that game there during Oktoberfest.
That'd be
pretty fun.
Oh, yeah. What's the best place to put it at? Is it Dusseldorf?
I don't know. I've never gone.
Dusseldorf?
Have you gone?
It'd be fun to say. No, I've never been to Dusseldorf.
I
like the pronunciation, though.
I don't know any of the things over there. All I know is that Lederhosen would be awesome. You have Pete Carroll in Lederhosen. John Schneider in Lederhosen.
There's a German Seahawkers.
Russell Wilson.
They come to training camp every year, and they wear Lederhosen while they're out there filming.
Yeah, I like those guys. I don't want to see Schneider in Lederhosen. Like, let's be very clear. I'm down for seeing Pete. Nobody wants to see Schneider in Lederhosen.
DK Metcalf in Lederhosen.
That'd be funny.
Bursting out.
Would he be able to fit? Yeah, that's a great point, Mora.
All right, this is something that we have asked before from some crazy things that he said, but I ask again, how was Mike Tannenbaum ever an NFL GM? Oh. This is his take on why Baker Mayfield has to have a really good year this year.
Oh, I think it's really important, Key, because I just don't know if he's a frontline guy that you're going to want to pay $35, $38 million a year to. I think that's a really good offense. They got maybe the best running back duo in the league. They got really good skill players. And if you're Cleveland, then do you feel like you could get, you know, comparable sort of production out of, say, someone like Kirk Cousins, someone that Kevin Stefanski is familiar with? And now you have $15, $20 million more to give to some of the other talented players on the team. So I think this is a hugely consequential year for Baker Mayfield.
He has to play well because you might replace him with Kirk Cousins.
I feel like they're on about the same playing field at this point in time.
Really?
I think Baker Mayfield has upside still.
Yeah.
I think he still has the upside. I feel like there are some things about both of them that are detriments. It's weird with Mayfield at times. I think he's a little bit too much of a gunslinger. With Cousins, it's that he never is the gunslinger that you kind of need him to be. Like, he, going back to what we were talking about earlier, is the guy who is not ever risking anything. I think with Mayfield that there are definitely questions about it. I don't entirely hate that take by Tannenbaum, but if we're comparing the two of them, it makes a lot more sense to invest long term in Baker Mayfield. And the sad thing is, I mean, that's just the cost of doing business with quarterbacks. I know that I have said you got to be more careful with some of the contracts that are given out, like we saw with Jared Goff. That felt careless. the Jared Goff contract.
Goff's felt dumb because they did it before they had to.
Right.
Right. There was, they paid him to be the quarterback they wanted him to be rather than what they knew he was. Here's the other thing. You don't have to be an artist to be an art critic. And you certainly don't have to be an athlete to be a sports reporter. But if you're hired in the media based entirely upon your experience as an executive, isn't it fair to hold your mistakes? Like when I hear Tannenbaum talk about another team's quarterback and whether he's good or not, I'm like, you're the dude that signed Mark Sanchez. Like yeah, that's you. And then what'd you do when you went? Because he was in Miami too, right? When they had the whole Tannehill contract,
2015 to 2018.
Why are we listening to you about quarterbacks?
They were. I saw some other take that he had today, and I forget it. I thought more you were going to go to the other take that I saw from him on the internet today, because that one also was questionable at best. I guess this is his day.
Earlier this offseason, we had him saying that Russell should force a trade to the Niners next year. Like the Seahawks would ever let that happen.
Very appropriate that his last name is that of a Christmas tree because, he is the gift that keeps on giving.
there it was. I wondered how you were going to pull that off.
Yeah.
I was like, a Christmas tree? Are we got a Stanford reference coming up? Nope. It was the gift that keeps on giving.
Here it is. He says, as discussed on ESPN this morning, Jordan Love will be the opening day starter for the Packers, and here's why. And basically his reason is because Blake Bortles is the other quarterback. And they like made a really big deal out of it in a graphic and all these things that they're promoting it on video. Calm down.
That dude's a Dusseldorf. Total Dusseldorf.
Speaking of the Packers situation, Paul referenced this earlier, but now I have the audio of Devontae Adams giving his thoughts on the Aaron Rodgers situation yesterday. Also, by the way, this portion of what Adam said is not on the Packers website. It seems to have been removed.
I got his back through everything, so he knows at the end of the day, if there's ever a wonder of, you know, he's lost a teammate or something because of all this come out, like, he knows where I stand. I'll stand on the mountain and scream on the mountaintop, you know, that I got his back. And, like, going back to the – I forgot who asked the question about if it was awkward. It can never be awkward because I think that any GM, any president, any owner, they should want type of guys that are, you know, backing their players, especially a player like that. You know, that's just a good trait to have. And, you know, it's not like I'm saying forget the front office. Like, you know, I don't respect what they have going on. I'm just saying I back my guy up.
Of course, the People's Republic of Green Bay would censor the words of their wide receivers to keep the masses unaware of the current situation they find themselves in.
I think it's admirable that he's trying to sort of split the baby. I love my quarterback, but I don't want to insult the guys that sign my checks. I think it's admirable. It's part of the price of what you're dealing with, though, with having your quarterback at odds with your franchise, right? Like, this isn't Devontae Adams' fault. This is the disconnect between... This is what happens when your quarterback is mad at your team publicly.
He could make this so much more difficult for the Packers. They should be very thankful he isn't. If I'm Devontae Adams and I want to play with Aaron Rodgers next year or this coming season, I'm sitting out practice. Solidarity. Hunger strike.
You're the guy that doesn't like labor unions, though.
Yeah, so?
It's Danny and Gallant. We'll talk a little bit more about the Seahawks runway. Maybe I'll see if I can get Paul Gallant to talk about the Mariners, though they're still on timeout.
No,
that's all
timeout.
I had, Danny and Gallant.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
We might get back to sticky substances here in just a second. You mentioned something as we were going to break. Devontae Adams, the best move for him would be to sit out from the offseason workouts in solidarity with Aaron Rodgers. And here's the thing, would that be the best career move for him? It's an honest question, because if he did that, Aaron Rodgers would always feel that he owed Devontae, right? Wherever he ends up going next, it would make the Packers mad. Davante Adams is entering the final year of his contract. It's not a good practice to antagonize the most likely team to not only re-sign you, but they could extend you and take the risk of injury off there. Do you seriously think that'd be a good career move?
It's a unique opportunity. I mean, forget about the good career move. Is Davante Adams one of the best wide receivers in the NFL? Certain people can get away with these things.
Yeah.
I know we like to assume that, you know, everything has to be fair and equal. No, not for this guy. He is a VIP, much like your star quarterback, and this is just a uniquely timed opportunity for the two of them. So, I mean, what's the harm in not showing up? Really, where is it other than paying fines?
It's so drilled into football players that you don't rock the boat. Like, it's so drilled into them that I think that they miss opportunities where, like, really, like, hey, you could right now rock the boat. Like, the fan base is divided about this. The team is trying to smooth things over with Aaron Rodgers. Like, you have an opportunity. And if Aaron Rodgers, by some way, happens to force his way out of town, by the way, you're a free agent next year. You don't think Aaron Rodgers is going to have sway with the next team he gets to and would say, like, go get Davante Adams?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely would think that. Now,
I mean, I like anarchy, so I totally want to throw this into it. Heck yeah, Davante Adams should be sitting out in solidarity with his quarterback.
I hate to rain on your parade, guys, but he spoke on that yesterday. He said, I'm from East Palo Alto, California. I grew up with $0. I'm not forfeiting any of my money that I earned.
Okay, I was actually just about to ask that next question. Thank you, Maura, for finding the answer to it. That makes sense.
It sure does. We're trying to cost him all of this money. It's a long-term play. It's like, get your hands out of my pockets.
That is something the NFL Players Association really failed on. I mean, that you now have to pay these fines if you miss out on practices. I know some teams make good by it, but...
I'm not sure how many of these fines actually end up getting collected at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's fair. In principle, though, we assume that the fines are taking place.
Yes, it gives teams a bigger stick, certainly, to be able to chase people out of it. But I assume, like, unless you miss games, the team's probably willing to forgive most of the fines. The big story in sports yesterday, and really this whole week, has been sticky stuff in baseball, right?
Yeah.
The Pelican dip grip, or what is it, spider tack, is the most recent compound that I've become familiar with. And people have talked about this for years. That spin rates, especially since you could start measuring spin rates with some of the tracking technology, that you've seen pitchers enhance the spin rate on their breaking balls, on curveballs. And the expectation is, hey, that's probably because they're doing something to get a better grip on the ball and release it with more rotation to get more torque on it. It turns out it's a sticky substance. Garrett Cole was asked about it yesterday and gave... He gave a fairly silly answer. He didn't deny something, but he certainly made it clear that, yeah, you knew what he's talking about. Here he is asked about whether he's ever used it.
And have you ever used spider tack while pitching?
I don't. I don't know. I don't know if.
So good.
I don't know quite. I don't quite know how to answer that, to be honest. I mean, there are customs and practices that have been passed down from older players to younger players, from the last generation of players to this generation of players.
If we were in a court of law, would that be admissible as evidence that Garrett Cole clearly is doctoring a baseball? Would that be admissible?
It wouldn't be a confession, right?
Right. It's as close to a confession as you could probably get without actually being a confession.
What does baseball do about this?
Man, I don't know what they can do. I really don't. And I've touched on this before. This would involve punishing everyone. And sort of like with the Seahawks, who were mauling wide receivers every single play, basically daring the referees to throw flags. That's what every pitcher is essentially doing. Are you going to throw every single pitcher out of a game? Are you going to have like a 10-day period where it's only positional players pitching? Is that what it would take to get them to stop? You would need like a TSA pre-check essentially too to determine whether or not somebody has gunk on them going into the game. And even then, these players, this sport, it is so crafty the way that over time elements like this have been a part of the game. And it's so ingrained in the culture, I think it would be hard for baseball to all of a sudden just get rid of all of the rats. The rats have made themselves a home here.
Can you have a conversation with the teams and players and say, guys, knock it off? Everybody has to stop doing this.
They did that with the sign stealing, at least allegedly. But
did that work? And the reason I ask that is because it's possible that the sign stealing had stopped. And it only resurfaced because Mike Fears told The Athletic in detail about it, and then it was dragged out into the light of day. There's an argument to be made, and I've seen that the sign stealing had largely stopped. And maybe that's wrong. Maybe it was continuing just as much as it had, but it seemed like that's what baseball tried to do with the using video equipment to steal signs, that they were aware of it. There were back and forth accusations. There was people being found near the dugout of different things, and that they had stopped it. And the problem was it got dragged out into the light of day by that story.
Yeah, that was definitely a factor. But I feel like it was something that was probably happening a lot in baseball. And did you notice how everyone got so quiet about it after they felt like they had cleaned it up? I mean, something like that. Do you want to be quiet about that? We sure have heard a lot from Yankee fans and Dodger fans about what took place allegedly in those. And I would just say, but those players, why haven't we heard from those players in a really long time? They got everyone to be quiet.
Well, baseball told them to shut up because right. It was bad for the sport, and that harping on cheating. I'm saying, how do you address a problem like this where a majority or a significant chunk of people are doing it, and say, I would say maybe the fairest thing would be to say, all right, you pitchers have been doing this. We're knocking the mound down. We're lowering the mound. We're do something specifically that dilutes the advantage that pitchers have if they're using something by and large. And if you say you punish all pitchers, you're like, no, not really. Like everybody's there's not enough hitting in the game, and we need to change the rules. You do something to mitigate it. I don't know if you can trust these guys to say you have to stop doing this.
Well, here's where I was going with that. If you were able to get the entirety of the sport to zip it about this cheating with the sign stealing, I bet that they will tell all of baseball to just shut up about this side of things too, right? Like this.
Well,
thing
I don't
Garrett
care
Cole,
about them shutting about it. I want them to stop using it. There needs to be more offense, and part of the reason there's not more offense is because they're using all it. The pitchers need to stop doing this.
The only teeth that baseball has is to basically try to make them stop talking about it. That's what I mean. Like, I don't think that they can actually enforce this, Danny. How are they going to go about doing it?
You have to be able to.
How? How do you do it? How do you do it?
Have them wash their hands before they come into the game under the supervision. You got to wash your hands for 2 minutes.
Do you really want to have 2 minutes before every single pitcher comes into a game? It already takes forever when a reliever comes in.
They'll do it in the bullpen before it happens. You got to be able to do something to stop it. Text in your solutions to this. 710-710, the Mac and Jack's text line. We raise flags next.
From the pocket and flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
It's that time every day we gather around and take stock of what has occurred. Praise, criticism, review, that which must be offered. Paul, would you like to start off?
Yeah, so I did want to start off by throwing a flag at LeBron James, who put up on Instagram this, I thought, preposterous post. It was a clip from Gladiator where at the bottom the caption read, "Promise you I will. Count me out if you want to. Hashtag the man in the arena. Hashtag the kid from Akron." Who has ever counted you out? We're counting you out now because you lost to old man Chris Paul and the Phoenix Suns, who have been a joke organization in the first round, when you had that Los Angeles Lakers team, which last year won the title. For the most part intact. Yes, I know Anthony Davis hurt. Count me out if you want to. I wanted to throw a flag on him for copyright infringement for stealing that video from Gladiator without the rights of DreamWorks, seeing as, you know, one time he sued Alabama to stop making a show, a barbershop show with a similar name.
That was awesome. Like LeBron James objecting to something Nick Saban did, that was fantastic. That was a victimless crime.
Well, that was copyright infringement, and he is guilty of copyright infringement. If we would be guilty of copyright infringement for posting that, but I'm not going to go there. How, Danny, in baseball, in any sport, do people forget to do the most basic thing? The most basic thing that you need to do. I'm talking about the most Pittsburgh Pirates of Pittsburgh Pirates things, which happened last night. Ke'Bryan Hayes, who hit a home run against the Los Angeles Dodgers, but missed first base and was called out in the dugout. This drives me crazy. There's something else in football when players who are on breakaway touchdowns don't bring the ball into the end zone. Honest question. How dumb are you? If that's something that you cannot remember to do, to step on first base, to step into the end zone, that, to me, inexcusable. It's like the most inexcusable thing that you can do. Forgetting to do something just so simple.
We all have things that we do that in our jobs.
Yeah.
Like, we all have those sort of things. I get what you're saying. I like watching base running gaffes. Like, I know people complain about it. It's easy. I like watching it. They're entertaining. Watching a highly paid, extremely skilled professional athlete mess up something very basic. Yeah, it's fun to me. It doesn't drive me nuts. It makes me laugh.
When Joe Mixon got drafted, obviously he had some other issues, but one of the reasons I didn't want to see Joe Mixon drafted by Houston back then was because he forgot to bring the ball into the end zone. Can't trust him. Can't trust him. Awful.
Maybe.
DeSean Jackson did that twice.
Yeah, he did do it twice.
Can't believe that.
The second one was pretty inexplicable. Twice. Ugh. Maura, what do you got?
DK did it last.
All right. I am going to, I guess, throw a flag on the city of Toronto. We always hear about how nice Canadians are, and I think they took it a little too far this time. The Maple Leafs just got ousted from the NHL playoffs in rather embarrassing fashion, losing early for the fourth year in a row. And they, after having a series lead, dropped a Game 7 to their rival Montreal Canadiens. And I mean, we're talking like one of the oldest rivalries because they're two of the original six teams. And now the Montreal Canadiens just knocked out the Winnipeg Jets. And the city of Toronto has this, probably their most recognizable landmark, the CN Tower. They lit it up in Canadiens colors last night in support of their fellow country team. And Leafs fans were not happy about it.
Well, don't lose.
This is traitorous. This is traitorous. You can't do that. Like, I wouldn't root for, if San Francisco was the last team left in the playoffs, like from the NFC West, you wouldn't root for them. I'd root for everybody but San Francisco. That's the sort of thing that's here.
And I guess we don't have the aspect of it being different countries, but still.
Yeah, but even then, man, Quebecois.
Yeah, that's actually Toronto, a thing.
Yeah, like there's, if I was a resident of Toronto, I would be furious that they did this.
Well, honestly,
like, don't you dare! Don't you dare do that.
I think it's making good for the British persecution of the Quebecois. You know, it's like a make good.
You always take it there, Paul.
Yeah, they did it. They did that.
I would be furious if I was in Toronto. Force them to leave their homes. Put those colors up.
Yeah.
Don't you dare put those colors up.
Ontario stinks. So do the Blue Jays.
Toronto's one of the underrated cities in North America. Toronto's awesome.
I've heard it's nice, but I want to just like it.
Persian bakeries that are there are absolutely fantastic. Delicious. I would like to raise a flag to one of our best listeners. He is at home in Southern Oregon right now, in a part of the country that I know well. The scraggly high pines of southeastern Oregon. Ryan DeWitt, who yesterday had an unfortunate injury with a chainsaw. He's the son of a logger.
Ow.
And very experienced. Yeah, it chewed up his thumb.
Oh!
He sent me a text. He said, are you squeamish? Because if you are, I won't send you a picture of my thumb.
Oh, well, so okay. I said, at least he asked first.
Yeah, and I was like, yeah, no, I want to see it. Because I'm well aware of what the damage that a chainsaw can do and how dangerous those things are. And he sent it to me, and I'm like, yeah, it's a pretty worthy injury. Ryan's someone, I met him at a Seahawks game. He's an Oregon fan. We give each other a really hard time. Ryan has a beautiful family there in Southern Oregon. and wishing all the best in his recovery, both for him and for his beautiful, beautiful family that's there.
Yeah, man. Jeez. That's...
Be careful with those chainsaws, man.
Yeah.
Like, it's no joke. Like,
don't juggle them.
I almost sent him back. I was like, it could have been worse, because there used to be a show called Axemen. I don't know if it's still on the Discovery Channel. There was a dude there that worked as a logger who had a hook instead of a hand, and he refused to take a disability check because he was like, I'm not disabled. He had previously cut off his hand and was insisted that he wasn't disabled because he could still operate the chainsaw just fine. It is a tough breed of people that log. Salt of the earth. Ryan's carrying on a worthy tradition, and I hope he heals up very, very quickly.
Yes. My goodness gracious. You know, that is something that I would stay away from by default. Underrated.
Chainsaws?
Yes. I'm staying away from those. I don't want to talk.
Oh, chainsaws are awesome to work. You have to be careful with them.
Yeah, exactly. And I
chainsaws
feel like
are fantastic.
I am just klutzy enough to potentially be a risk to myself.
I'm with you on that.
Just klutzy enough. Like, it's like 2% probably, but it's just enough where I would be pretty nervous handling it the first time, and I would not want to do it unless I did it 5 or 6 times. You know what another one that terrifies me is? Pressure washers. Pressure washers scare the crap out of me. You've never seen a bad picture of a pressure washer gone wrong. Your friend sent you that? My friend did not ask me, hey, are you...
You can spray your skin off. Yeah.
Yeah, oh... Yeah, you can go further than that. My friend did not ask me if I was squeamish about that, and he sent me a pic, and I was very upset for the rest of the day. Anyway, on that note,
that's going to do it for us. Want to thank Michael Bumpus for joining us here on Bump Day. Also had John Clayton here for the morning drive. Maura Dooley keeping us in check for the most part over the course of the day, and he is Paul Gallant, and yeah. You better ask his permission before you send him gruesome pictures.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, that's a common thing that all friends should do. He is Danny O'Neill, and he wants to go all in because he is obsessed with the movie Rounders. I think that's what it's all about. So long. Farewell. Up next, is it realistic to expect a first-time OC to significantly improve his new offense, his first year in charge? I'll talk about that next.